This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Web Conference in Austin, 2011.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it, deploy an enterprise-class content management solution that runs entirely on your existing web server environment, supports multiple sites, maintains existing user access, security, and disk quota protections, is easy for technical or for non-technical contributors to learn and use while being flexible enough to handle a wide range of sites. And that's relatively simple for IT to maintain while you're still expected to do everything else that you do. Of course, we also had no budget for this. So this pretty much started off as a, I wouldn't say a project that was meant to fail, but didn't really look all that promising from the beginning. So I'm Jason Petoniak, as Jason just introduced me, and this is a true story. So the web at RIT, this is probably where I should have put up the lolcat saying you're doing it wrong. We have no central marketing department. Our university publications office oversees our homepage and some of the second level content on our site. But then beyond that, it's all individual departments. And there's really no structure. We have some guidelines that university publications publishes how you're supposed to set things up, but there's really nothing in place for anyone to enforce that or anything like that. So it's really all over the place. And no one actually has a web budget either. So departments are kind of left to their own discretion to figure out how to pay for their websites, which leaves everyone with basically four development options. They can build internally, they can hire a student, they can hire on-campus resources that are available, or they can hire an off-campus developer. If you build internally, that usually means that you buy a staff assistant a copy of Dreamweaver, and if she's really lucky, you also go out and spend $20 on a web template somewhere and give her that as a starting point. A few of our colleges do have dedicated web staffs, but the other ones kind of see it as, why should I hire a web person when I could be hiring faculty?
Sorry about this.
All right. You still can't hear me. Hello? Am I on? Can you hear me? All right, well, I have a ton of content here, so I'm going to just keep going, whether you can hear me or not, whether they're recording me or not. All right, so the other option, hire a student. We have really talented students. Obviously, our name's Rochester Institute of Technology. We are a technical school. We have students in information technology that are taking web design as a course of study. And they have some great ideas. We also have a co-op program where most of our programs, we have some sort of an experiential component to them where you have to actually go out and get a job somewhere as part of, in order to get your degree. And so a lot of departments will hire a student as a co-op for 10, 11 weeks to build a website for them. And it's pretty cost effective because you pay $10 an hour, it works out to be about $5,000 for the quarter, and you've got a brand new, bright, shiny website. But the student then leaves, and then what happens to your site? Sometimes nothing. Sometimes nothing for many, many years, including content. So then there's on-campus resources. Our library has a group that does web design. They do it on a chargeback basis. Their prices are probably pretty consistent with what you would pay if you went out and hired a co-op to do it. They are actually using co-ops to do their own work. I have another microphone coming.
If you would, good sir.
I apologize. Okay, now. All right. The advantage of going with ETC with this group over just hiring a student is you know that ETC is going to follow the standards. That's not necessarily something that's important to the departments right away, but that's kind of important to the rest of us. But they do have a very high demand, and they are often quite backlogged, so it can take a while before they get anything done. Then you can go out and hire an off-campus developer. I've seen everything from freelance to some of the bigger agencies in town being used for some departments. But that's generally going to be your least cost-effective option. So with all that, that leaves us with sites that look like that. And interest of full disclosure, this was actually a site that my team developed, and we just hired a kick-ass designer that did this for us. To that. So content management at RIT. In the early 2000s, we actually went out and purchased a proprietary system. I'm not going to say what system that was, but it was very expensive. It was a full content management system. It wasn't just a web CMS. So it did a lot more than we actually bought it to do, which kind of made it needlessly complex and difficult to use. ITS didn't have dedicated resources to run it, so it was just kind of, someone was like, hey, you're the CMS guy. I'm still not saying the name of the system. In the end, it really didn't get used. Never really got pushed out and evangelized by ITS, so people didn't really know it was out there. Those that didn't have the time to learn it and try to get going with it, so it never really went anywhere. Somewhere 2007, 2008, we replaced our digital computing environment. If you remember, DEC was probably already gone for about 10 years by then, so it was a little bit overdue. We added a lot of new features that people wanted, like PHP 5. We were giving them 3 before, and you couldn't really do anything with it. MySQL. And we also switched from this crazy URL structure that we had that came about in the early 90s when the web was like brand new, where we just took your department number, put www on the end of it, and that was your web address. So we actually went to a clean URL structure that is actually search engine friendly and whatnot now. And we also introduced the staging and production environments, so you could build your site on one server and do all your testing and everything and not affect your site that everyone's out there using. So about 2008, 2009, University Publications came out with their new web guidelines, and two representatives from there sitting right there right now. If you have any questions about that, I'm sure they would be happy to answer them. and around the same time, our web advisory committee said, hey, it's kind of time we start thinking about CMS again, giving people that don't really want to go out and spend money to build a website, giving them some tools so that they can get a halfway decent looking site together. And so then we started our CMS selection. So we looked at what was already being used on the environment, what people were installing. And we also did a survey. And unfortunately, my boss at the time when we did this, put together the survey and this really cool survey tool that we have on campus. He's no longer at RIT. And I had read access to the survey, but it's gone. They must have purged it when they purged his account or something like that, because I could not find the survey, because it had some interesting questions, and I wanted to get that in there. But once we got that, we kind of went through the results, figured out where we were going to go. Of course, we had no budget. So our solution had to be free, had to run on our current servers, because we couldn't go out and buy any new ones. The solution was also had to be pretty easy to use because we didn't have any money to get trained in how to use it. But we were also told that we had to consider the system that we were already using just to see how that would weigh out. It was pretty much set up that there was no way that was going to happen because, well, A, it ran on Windows, and we're using Solaris on our environment. So right there, we had a problem. So the contenders, we looked at Joomla, we looked at Drupal, and we looked at the commercial CMS name for the colored shapes that it used in its UI that we are still not going to name. So Joomla was already being used by undergraduate admissions, and undergraduate admissions has a big role in our web advisory committee, so that was one that we definitely wanted to look at. It is open source, so it was free. It's pretty flexible, has a lot of good extensions out there. If you're trying to do something, you can probably figure out a way to do it with Joomla. Runs PHP, MySQL, it would run in our environment just fine, but it didn't have multi-site support, or at least I don't believe it did. Drupal was already very popular. It was probably between that and WordPress are like the number one and number two thing that people have installed on our environment. Very extensible. You can find modules for anything you want. There's also a huge developer community, so it's not going anywhere anytime soon. But it does tend to be kind of slow and bloated and somewhat complex if you're a new user going into it. It's a little daunting. Crimson Circle CMS, out of the box support for multiple sites, but it was a lot more than just a website manager, and that made it difficult to use. Ran on Windows, so that was a problem, although we already did have servers provisioned for it. And the UI really worked well in IE and not so much in anything else, so we have a pretty high population of Mac users that was going to cause some problems for them. And then, of course, there was the price that we had no money to pay for it. And in order to use it effectively, you really needed to get trained. And again, we had no money for that. So the winner was Drupal. Why? Well, it's easy enough for non-technical users to pick up with a little bit of training. Flexible enough to power our more complex websites, our e-commerce sites, and that sort of thing. We can do all that in Drupal. E-commerce solutions are available. Students that are doing a lot of our site development, they've already been using it, they know it. So that made it a good fit for us. So our implementation team from ITS, we had a technical lead, we had a senior programmer analyst, that was me, and a project manager. And then from University Publications, we had two web developers that helped us out with it. And this core team was pretty much responsible for all of the decision making and the implementation, the evangelism, and training for the general community. We also pulled in some resources from other areas, mainly areas that had professional web developers in them already. We did things like planning and requirements gathering. We wanted to make sure that it was something that our professional teams were going to want to use. And then that way, once they started using it, it would trickle out to the less technical people. We also, our library was using Drupal pretty extensively already. And so we tapped into one of their developers and then eventually stole him away. But we used him for a lot of training for us and the core team. All the questions like, how do we set up views? How do we implement this module? What's the best way to do this? And then we also used those teams to do a couple of pilot sites to make sure we were on the right track and make sure that everything was working before we went to the full campus. So now I'm getting to the challenges. I'd like to say we just went, ran, installed that PHP and everything was good, but can't really say that. So the first challenge was our technical lead went off and became an FBI agent. Yeah, he had applied for this job before he even came to RIT and then got the call one day. It was like, hey, guess what? You picked you. You're one of two in the 100 people we were considering. I really can't make that up. So that forced me to take on a lot of additional responsibilities for the project. Also forced me to take on three other projects that he was working on. So pretty much I didn't see home ever. But we made it through. Challenge two, we had to fit Drupal into our existing structure. And the way that we're set up right now, or that we were at the time, we still are, every site that we set up has its own Unix account, and we have probably the most complicated web environment ever. We're using Mod Rewrite. There's a feature called Rewrite Map, and it basically it's a text file that you match this key, and it redirects you to whatever you have on the other side. So we're using all these Rewrite Map files to actually get that. When you go to rit.edu/science, or I think it's COS, College of Science, that then goes and redirects you to internally to /tilde w-COS or something like that. It's all transparent to the end user, but it provides a challenge for us trying to get Drupal working. And using this setup, we can maintain quotas. We can take sites down if there is a security issue or anything like that pretty easily. So it's a fairly secure, I won't say perfectly secure, but a fairly secure setup. And we wanted to try to keep that. So Drupal would ideally be installed once, and we could set up multiple sites within one installation of Drupal. But we just had to figure out where that was going to be. We considered putting it in the account that runs the homepage, but we weren't planning on rolling out Drupal, and we still haven't, for the homepage content. And while it would be possible to mix the static homepage content that we had out there with Drupal, we figured that would get really hard to manage. And especially since ITS maintains Drupal, but University Publications maintains the content, we'd be stepping on each other's toes all the time. That probably wasn't the best way to go. So I said, well, what if I just go in and start adding sites or adding URLs into the rewrite map files manually? And tried that, and it actually worked pretty well. Except that when I went and created a new account, Webman, the tool that we use to create accounts and everything in, it goes and rewrites those files every time we set up a new account, so I lost all the Drupal stuff that I added. Reworking Webman, being the only developer available to do it, that wasn't an option at this time. I had way too much stuff going on to try to do that. So well, what if I just create some new rewrite map files and just stick them in with the other ones? And that actually worked really well, but that meant that everything in Drupal ended up in one account. So we lost the ability to control quotas. It just became more difficult to manage things like MySQL and whatnot, because we have this whole system set up to do it one way, and we were kind of changing that. And it also made it a little bit more difficult if we had to take down a site to do that, although it wouldn't be impossible. So really came up with, we need to find a way to continue using the system we have in place now. The way I did that was came up with an htaccess file that just redirected everything for Drupal into the other account, using the same process that we're using with the rewrite maps. Everything's internal. No one knows that it's happening. So it allowed us to continue using our existing controls on our sites, made retrofitting content easier because we could stick Drupal on the site, but all the old content could still be there while the developers were working on moving things over. And so this is basically the htaccess that we came up with. And if you're familiar with Drupal, all of these are the typical files and directories that you see in a new Drupal install, for the most part. There's a couple of other things we had to throw in for bug fixes and whatnot. And then that just redirects to the w-Drupal account where Drupal happens to be installed. And then we have down here, it's looking for things that don't exist when you request something. And if there isn't really a file there, then it just sends you off to Drupal. And then there's some additional stuff there for handling when you just go to slash, you don't have an actual URL or a file or whatever you want to call it in your URL. On the Drupal side, we used a kind of little-known feature of PHP. There's a auto prepend file. It did advance the slide so I could remember what it was called. What that does is you put that in it's a directive in your PHP, and you set that to a path to a file. And PHP, every time it executes a script, it will actually include that file first before it does anything in the script. So you can do all kinds of stuff that you want to, if you want to tweak environment variables or anything like that. So if you go back here, you see right up here at the top, we've got this requested site. And that's just setting an environment variable that says what URL you're coming from, because when you do the internal redirects, PHP actually sees it coming from /w-drupal, and it doesn't know how to handle it. So I'm going the wrong way. So here's my prepend PHP file. I had to go searching because Apache munges that requested site. When it does redirects, it adds redirect sometimes 2 or 3 times in front of it. So I go and I find that variable in whatever form it's in at the time. And then I just changed script name and PHP self, did just a string replace for w-drupal and replaced it with whatever that environment variable was. Worked great. And that's what we're continuing to use now. So the next challenge was how we protect users from themselves. So we wanted to give as much control to people as we can. One of the issues, well, we're consider ourselves an innovation university, so we need to encourage people to be innovative, so it kind of goes against being restrictive. You know, as much as some of us would love to lock down our web environment and not have to worry about security vulnerabilities and all that sort of stuff that comes with having an open system, it doesn't really fit with the mission of our IT. History also tells us that if we get too restrictive, back when we had that old DEC system that didn't do anything that people wanted to do, they were going out and buying servers and sticking them under their desks, and that created a lot more problems for us than we wanted to have. So we don't want to go back down that road again. So we need to keep things fairly open. However, we knew that if we gave out too much control, people would break things. Possibly on purpose, possibly just accidentally. They could turn off security settings. They could change file paths to locations that don't work. And then there's always I don't want ITS. Why does ITS need to be in my site? I don't want them messing with that. Well, we need to have access to the site so we can do updates and things like that. So the solution, I was actually talking to the developer that replaced me at my old job, our National Technical Institute for the Deaf, which is one of our colleges. And they had actually created a system that went in, and Drupal has the concept of user one, which is kind of like root in Unix. They just blocked anyone from being able to do anything with user one unless you were user one. So I took their code, and I kind of expanded that, added some code in there that did the same kind of thing, just hides form fields on anything that I don't want someone messing with. So I can control what modules people can turn on and off. I hide other form fields that I don't want them changing settings and stuff like that on. And it's working out pretty well for us. But then we ran into this other issue. Drupal, like I said before, we've got this, Drupal kind of expects to be installed in your web root and all your sites underneath it. And we've got this kind of horizontal thing where we've got all these accounts that we're trying to run Drupal in from one account. So I figured that the easy fix for that would just be to use symbolic links around Solaris. Should work fine. So this is what I basically set up. I create a directory in the account called Drupal files, and I just redirect the Drupal, or just linked where the Drupal files directory should be for a site, just linked it to that and did some permission settings and stuff and got it all working. Then I get a call from one of our backup operators, and it was like the day after I set this up. It's like, this account, he has no idea that we're doing anything with Drupal or what Drupal is for that matter. And I get this call, and he's like, there's some account in the web environment, and you're the owner of the account. It's w-drupal. It's like in this endless loop in the backup system. So he's like, I had to kick it out. So we're not backing that account up anymore. You know, that's not an option. So I immediately said, oh, it must be the symlinks. So we decided that we needed to get rid of them. So Drupal has this concept of public and private files. Private files are actually loaded by Drupal, so you have to go through the whole Drupal bootstrap and everything, but it loads the file and it pushes it out to the server or out to the client instead of letting Apache do that. So we switched all the sites. We had like three at the time. We switched them all over to use private files, and we thought we were good. Yeah. But the private files weren't sending out proper cache headers, and so nothing was getting cached, and people started complaining that their sites were really slow, the three sites that we had. So they were being sent, the headers were being sent as they should be, but they were sent expired. So we thought about this for a while. And then one day I thought, hey, we've got that code in there that says, if this doesn't exist as a file, then redirect to Drupal. What if I put, and Drupal uses /system/files for its private URLs. I'm like, what if I actually created a directory system/files and we put all the files there? So we switched to that. And basically, Drupal thought we were using private files, but Apache saw the files and it just loaded them as it normally would, and so that worked great. Almost. We still needed to give people access to themes, and there was no way of changing that themes directory. Again, going back to the, if we don't let people do things the way that they want to do them, they're going to go off and do it their own way, some other way. We needed this to work for Drupal to be successful. So I just happened to be in a meeting with one of our system administrators one day, something completely unrelated. I'm like, why are we having this problem? Can we fix this somehow? And so we did some testing. And we found out that there really wasn't a problem. I don't know what caused the backup issue in the first place. I still haven't figured that one out, but it wasn't the symlinks. So we went back and we put everything in symlinks, and you know, we're still using that to this day. Except that the symlinks don't push to production. The way that our environment works, we don't give any of our users direct access to the production environment. They have to use a web app to move their files across. And when you try to move a symlink, you get an error. And I know exactly why that happens. I don't really know how to fix it, just because of the way that the system was implemented. So, so I already said that. So I created a quick script, no real UI or anything, just a form field that I could say, set up this site, click submit on production, and it went and did everything for me. So we're actually still using a very similar system to that, and it's working great. But it was just one small step in a very complicated installation process, which took a lot of time to work with, about 15 steps to install a site. I had to create the account, create database, copy the MySQL passwords from the account. We have a system for including your passwords so that you don't actually have to have it included in your code and things like that. We had to copy all that into the Drupal account, set up all the stuff for Drupal, and then copy a database over. It was taking me about 30 to 45 minutes to do one site. And that was with experience. And I still was making mistakes. And we really wanted to turn this over to either to our student employees or to our service desk so that we could just automate it. Go, hey, I want a Drupal site, click a box, and you have Drupal. We weren't going to be able to do that this way. So I wrote Drupalizer, which was for the front end, a little script that version one was just a simple script. It created an htaccess file. That was all it did. Still a lot of manual stuff that I had to do. Version 1.0, we added a few options there. We could have it create the directories and that sort of thing now. I have a feeling I'm going to end up on the homepage of the conference site next year because I always seem to. For a small fee, you kept on. And then finally, the version we're using right now is a wizard type interface that has a couple of steps. You set everything up on the in the account, and then it moves over to Drupal and sets up everything in Drupal. Really got us down to six steps. Create the account, upload Drupalizer, run Drupalizer, copy the database, and then just go in and set the site-specific stuff that needs to be set. And then add user access, of course. So I'm going to do a real quick demo, just show you how easy this is. I've already gone copied the database and everything. But so here's my account. I have Drupalizer in there. I had internet access. OK, good. Everything pretty much gets pulled out of environment variables. So really, all you have to do is click install. And this does the creates the HT access file and all that. Finish installation to do the backend stuff in the Drupal account. And already exists. I forgot to clear that out. I'm setting up and tearing down sites in that account all the time, testing stuff. So, but anyway, now if I go back to the account that I was just in, which is just rit.edu/json, instead of seeing that link to Drupalizer, you now see Drupal. And normally it would be an actual working copy of Drupal. But again, like I said, I'm always tearing things down and setting things up, so it's obviously not working at the moment, which is kind of a bummer. But that's essentially how long it takes to set up a site now. No. I have way too many slides in this presentation. And I'm down to 10 minutes. All right, so where are we now? Well, just after a year and a half since we launched, we've got 65 sites, which is about 10% of all the sites that we have on the web environment in Drupal right now. There's no requirement that people switch to Drupal. It's just an option that we're making available. So that's I would say that's pretty good for for a year and a half. About a year ago, this time last year, we had about 20 sites. So we're moving along pretty well. Similar setup for National Technical Institute for the Deaf has another 32 sites. That's a team that just does pretty much everything for the sites. They wanted to switch to Drupal right after I left. They hired their new developer and a new manager, and somewhere in there they said, "Hey, we should be doing this things a little different." Started looking at Drupal. They helped us out a lot, and then we helped them out. We set up a multi-site setup the same way that we're doing it. So they've got 32 sites in there. One college has converted all of their individual department accounts, or at least most of them at this point, to Drupal. I guess we have like two other sites that are starting to talk about it. Every college has at least one site that's in Drupal right now. So I think those are pretty impressive numbers. We're also working to convert the 30-plus finance and administration division sites that my group actually maintains, converting all of those, the direction of our vice president, into Drupal by early next year. So next steps. So we want to get upgraded to Drupal 7. We're in 6 right now. We know we've got to do the update sometime soon. We've got some technical issues that we need to get through, but we really want to do that. We also now have some money available. We just got approved to get actual servers. So we're going to be looking to move Drupal off of our main web environment, do some proxy stuff, and have a little bit more robust environment that's a little more locked down to the sites that are running Drupal. We're also looking to eliminate any single points of failure like MySQL that we have currently. And we want to put a reverse proxy cache like Varnish in front of it to just speed things up. And I want to do some more improvements to Drupalizer, make the whole process automated. So like I said, we can turn it over to the service desk. Someone calls up and says, hey, I want a Drupal site. They can click a button and create a Drupal site. I also want to look into this idea that I have Drupal sudo. Right now, we've got students that are maintaining sites for us. Myself and another full-time developer are doing a lot of Drupal work. And Drupal has this one user, this user one is the one administrative account that is like super user for everything. So kind of going on the idea with Unix is, how can I create something so that you can, and the way I'm envisioning is you would log into a website somewhere and it would set a cookie that says you're a super user. And then when you log into a Drupal site, it would see that cookie and then do some sort of a web service lookup to make sure that you are actually legitimately have that cookie, and then would give you, it would just promote you to be user one. I don't know if that's going to work or not, but that's something I want to look into. And I'm also kind of doing a side project right now as part of our conversion from quarters to semesters. I have a student that's looking at some enterprise search stuff. He's specifically looking to find all the places where content needs to be updated. But I want to, we don't have a very good search for our campus right now. So I'm kind of hoping that I can piggyback the work that he's doing to say, hey, we need to set up some decent search servers, whether it's a Google search appliance or he's using an open source or free, I don't know if it's open source, product called Search Blocks to do his work. I want to integrate a search so that we can do site-specific searching, but also have kind of an enterprise-wide search, much better than what we have right now. So that's essentially what we're doing. Hopefully you found it useful to kind of know some of our trials and tribulations. I like red staplers. Just keep that in mind as you're filling out your evaluation. and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes. Yeah, about that. We didn't consider it. I don't really know why we didn't. I think more because it was still more of a blog platform and would be a little bit more difficult for end users to figure it out for doing like more straight content page-based type sites. Any more questions? Yeah, I guess I did. Yes. Yes, it is. No, you don't. Yeah, rewrite maps, you don't. If you're just doing straight rewrites in a conf file, you do have to restart Apache, but for rewrite maps, and I think that's why, that was actually implemented before I took this job, so I didn't have any real part in that, but I have done a lot of research into how they work and all that. And I think that was why, because we could stand up accounts and not have to go and restart Apache every time. Yes? This was my main work for probably about a little less than a year and a half, was my main focus. Like I said, I had four or five other projects going on at the same time, but this was the one that took up the most of my time. And it did take us quite a while to figure it all out and get it working. We launched, officially we had our first open forum for the whole campus to kind of launch Drupal and say that, hey, it's available. It was March 24th, 2010. And we started this, like, I think it was late 2008 when we started doing the work. So it took us quite a while. Okay, well, if there's no more questions, if you do have questions, flag me down. I'll be here through, I'm doing a post-conference workshop, so I'll be here right up until the end. Flag me down, or I tend to kind of track, if it's TPR9, so if you tag that on Twitter or something like that, I'll be kind of watching the comments and stuff like that. So ask questions, and I'll hopefully find them and answer them for you.